For WERU comes from Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine, covering Maine's boats, harbors, arts, and architecture since 1987, bringing the coast as close as the mailbox, on the web at maineboats.com.
The time is 9:59, and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. A WERU special mock caucus with host Magnus Johnstone is up next.
Well, good morning and welcome to WERU's first ever mock caucus. My name is Magnus, and I am joined here in the studio by five representatives of the Hancock Democratic Committee. They are Bethany Reynolds.
Hi.
Will Rice.
Hello.
Lael Stegall.
Good morning.
And Nancy Hodomarski.
Good morning.
And Dick Attlee.
Hi.
And the mock caucus was a phrase borrowed from the Democratic Committee's mock caucus, which happened in Ellsworth on Thursday, January 17th. And I went down to that caucus and was very gratified to see so many people turning out to partake in the democratic process. They obviously cared very much about the future of the nation, had come out on a cold January evening, driven to Ellsworth, and the feeling in the room was very positive. Everybody seemed to enjoy themselves. It was a fun evening, and everybody liked each other, and there were good feelings all around. But I don't know that I understood the process completely, and I'm sure that the audience would like to know how caucuses differ from primaries and how the mock caucus worked. So Bethany Reynolds, who is the vice chairman of the Hancock Democratic Committee, has come down to explain just exactly what happened on Thursday the 17th in Ellsworth at City Hall.
Hi, thanks. What we did, it was a mock caucus, which was to sort of give our members an idea of how the actual caucus works. And the real caucus, of course, is coming up on Sunday, February 10th. The caucuses in Maine for the Democratic Party are held all over the state in each municipality. So you would have to vote in the caucus in your town. For instance, if you're in Brooklyn, there's a Brooklyn caucus, there's an Ellsworth caucus. We're actually caucusing in all 38 municipalities for Hancock County. If you're not sure where to go for yours, you can go to our website, which is hancockdems.org, and find a list of all the caucus locations and times. Basically, what a caucus is, it's different from a primary in that a primary is an election. It's like the primaries that you're used to, where you go into a ballot booth and cast your ballot. A caucus is more of a meeting of your local Democratic Party, where you conduct some party business, you elect your officers for your town committee and so on, you confirm your bylaws and sometimes make changes in those, you elect election clerks, and then you get on to the exciting part in a presidential year, which is the presidential preference voting. And what happens then, it's kind of like a big game of Red Rover. Everybody gets together in corners of the room for their candidate. Usually people will speak first and talk about why they support a particular candidate, and then everyone will divide up, and they're counted up, and then they divide up the number of delegates that town is allowed according to the percentage of people in each group. And the number of delegate counts comes down from our state party, so each town has a different number of delegates depending on their size. And at that point, the people in each group decide who their delegates are going to be to the state convention. And at the state convention, those delegates are pledged to support those particular candidates on the first round of voting. After that, they might change groups. But it's a lot of fun at the caucus because what happens is people will try to rally supporters. People who are uncommitted, they'll try to bring them over to their side so they can get more delegates, and it really gets to be quite a lot of fun.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I and another individual were undecided. We were in the middle of the room, and the four different corners tried to get us to go to their corners with various arguments. And at that point, there was a tally board. And he sort of took a percentage of the people in the room versus the delegates that would be sent to the convention. Mm-hmm. And so there was a first vote, there was a second vote, there were three votes?
Two votes,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the end result was that, first of all, how many delegates were sent to the convention from, or will be?
We were basing it on 10, just for demonstration purposes.
I see.
In a particular town, it might be anywhere from 1 to our largest town in the county has 20. So.
Uh-huh.
It's divided up proportionately. So, for instance, if someone gets 30% of the supporters at that caucus, and if they have 10 delegates to allocate, then 3 delegates are going to go for that candidate.
Mm, okay. And we are having a mock caucus based on the Democratic Hancock caucus in Ellsworth on Thursday the 17th. We are playing with the idea of having a mock Republican caucus. We're going to take calls from the audience a little bit later. If anybody is interested in doing that on the Republican side, please feel free to give us a call. But before we do that, we're going to have representatives of each of the 4 candidates give a little talk about why they favor their candidates and what they think is going to happen in the ensuing process. We're going to start off, as we did on Thursday the 17th, with Nancy Hartomarski. And Nancy, you've been affiliated with the Hancock Democratic Committee for how long?
Not the committee, but with the Deer Isle Democrats.
Okay, the Deer Isle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course,
out there on the wharf, every Fisherman's Wives Day with our canopy and, you know, working for the Democrats, right?
Okay. But everybody who showed up in Ellsworth on the 17th was allowed to vote. So there was no sort of, you know, proprietary thing. I mean, I was allowed to vote. I've never been a part of this before. So, and you're an advocate of Hillary Clinton.
Correct.
And why is that? And what do you hope for her candidacy?
All right. Well, when we review Hillary Clinton's 35 years of making policy and answering some of America's biggest problems, we are impressed by her depth of knowledge, the force of her intellect, and the breadth of her experience. She was born into middle-class America, one grandfather a factory worker, the other grandfather a fireman, her father a draper, her mother a lifelong advocate of children's causes. Having grown up in this home with these parents, Hillary has been given a particularly strong resolve to achieve what she has achieved, and she has always been a generous, caring human being with a fierce sense of justice. From her earliest years, she, like her mother, identified with those causes for those who were least able to defend themselves. She's never been driven by political polls. There's no poll out there that says you win by supporting children's causes. Children don't vote. And yet children's causes have always been central to Hillary's work. She worked in the public defender's office while she was at Yale Law School on children's causes. Upon graduation, instead of going to prestigious law firms, she went to Marion Wright Edelman's Children's Defense Fund. After a stint in Washington on the House Judiciary Committee, she went to Arkansas, married Bill, became a lawyer in the Rose Law Firm, but continued to handle cases of child abuse and foster care. She organized the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. She improved education in Arkansas. As First Lady, she led efforts to make adoption easier, to expand early learning child care. She donated all the proceeds from her best-selling book, It Takes a Village, to children's causes across America. As U.S. Senator, her advocacy for children continues. She strengthened SCHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. She has worked to ensure the safety of prescription drugs for children. All right. So Hillary is a senator has led the charge. She's led the charge for children. But she has also been the first New York senator to serve on the Armed Services Committee, has worked for necessary resources for our military. She has visited our troops in Afghanistan, Iraq, Walter Reed Military Hospital many times. She has passed legislation to track the health status of our troops and was the original sponsor of legislation to expand health benefits for the National Guard and Reserves. More change. She introduced legislation to tie congressional salary increases to an increase in the minimum wage for all working Americans. She helped pass legislation that encouraged investment to create jobs in struggling communities, and more change. She championed broadband internet access in rural communities. In 2006, New Yorkers reelected Hillary to the U.S. Senate with 67% of the vote. That is confidence. Confidence in this senator's ability to make the right kind of change. Hillary's top issues, in addition to those I've mentioned, is providing affordable and accessible health care for every American. She's the closest to universal health care in her proposal. Ending the war in Iraq, fulfilling promises to veterans, government reform to address the powers of the presidency and strengthen democracy, addressing the immigration system, promoting energy independence, and fighting global warming. In the U.S. Senate, her reputation is not one of divisiveness. She's been able to make good stuff happen. And when we look, and finally, this great-hearted, hardworking woman has used her years in the Senate to immerse herself in national security issues. She has won the respect of world leaders and many leaders in the American military. She will be a strong commander-in-chief, the commander-in-chief who will also restore our pride in our nation. I am proud she is running. I am proud she knows how to handle every challenge. I am convinced she has never flagged and will never flag in her determination to make this nation a better nation, this world a better world.
Thank you, Nancy. And next up, we have Will Rice, who's an advocate for John Edwards. And Will, how long have you been involved with the Democratic Committee?
Just about 2 years.
And you like John Edwards because?
I first was drawn to John Edwards when I heard him speak when he ran 4 years ago. When, for the first time, my awareness for at least 25 years, a Democratic candidate uttered the word poverty, or maybe it was poor people, and what to do about that. And I just thought that that's such a central idea to what being a Democrat should be, which is this idea that we're all in this together, that if parts of the human family are suffering and being left behind, we can't turn our backs on that, that I was very much impressed by him. He's obviously very articulate, very intelligent, very energetic. But I think that focus on who's doing the least well and what can we do about that is central to my being drawn to him. As he often says in his speeches, he's very personally he's personally involved in that issue because he did grow up in very humble surroundings in North and South Carolina. His family worked in mills in those states. And he's made a good life for himself. He's a very bright guy. He went to college, the first one in his family. He went to law school. He became a lawyer. And then he spent the next 20 years fighting very powerful interests in courtrooms, in defense of children and families and other people without a strong voice or a voice at all, and being successful in that. A tactical thing is I think that he would do well all across the country in against the Republican candidate, including in rural areas, where I'm not sure other major Democratic candidates necessarily do that well. I think all the major candidates are similar, all the major Democratic candidates are similar in their opinions and programs for Iraq, for the economy, for the environment. The question is who can best solve those problems. On the issue of health care, for instance, the Democratic Party has been talking about getting national health insurance since the administration of Harry Truman 60 years ago. We haven't gotten it yet. And why is that? It's because there's certain entrenched, powerful interests like the insurance industry that don't want there to be a change in our current health care system. Well, John Edwards knows how those insurance companies think because he's been battling them in courtrooms. He did for 20 years. And he knows how to beat them. Obviously, in all government, there's compromise. but you can't go in compromising. You have to go in with a strong position, a strong opening position, and know how to defend it and only make those compromises that are necessary. John Edwards can do that. I think it's time for a fighter for the Democratic Party, and I think John Edwards is the best person to fill that role.
Well, thank you, Will. Next up, we have Dick Attlee, who is an advocate of Dennis Kucinich's. Dick?
Well, thank you. I mean, it's probably patently obvious to everybody who's paying attention that Dennis Kucinich is no longer running for president. So you might ask, well, what's there a Kucinich representative on this program for? And the reason I think it's important to support Dennis Kucinich, even though he's not in this race, is because of his ability to think, and I hate to use a hackneyed expression, outside the box in ways that the other candidates don't. There may be shared beliefs among all the candidates, but they can't necessarily go in the directions that will accomplish those because they're still thinking in the fabric that controls politics in this country. Dennis has always been someone who speaks very directly to very large issues, which I don't hear all the candidates talking. You may say, well, gee, they're all talking about large issues. But what I'm talking about, there are three basic problems that I see that are threatening this country that are not being addressed. The first one is our foreign policy over the past 50, 60 years, and maybe even going back further, which is an expansionist one that seeks to influence or outright control other countries in the world in terms of our own interests. It's what some people would call an imperialist policy, which is what empire basically is, although some people have a problem with that word. But whatever you call it, what it has caused us is particularly, and you can see that in this recent administration, it's caused us to expend huge amounts of money in military endeavors, in military bases all over the world. And these bases have been increasing steadily. They increased all through the Clinton administration. There's now about 780 of them all over the world. This is a huge amount of expense which cannot be paid for all the other wonderful ideas that all the candidates are talking about. I certainly appreciate the micro policies that I read about on the candidates' websites, but none of them can actually happen if we are being completely beggared by military expenditures, which are absolutely essential if we're going to carry on with the same foreign policy we've had. Dennis Kucinich talks about a Department of Peace, which sounds a little ludicrous when you first hear about it, but in fact, most of the scientific and technical know-how in this country since 1960 has been funneled into military, various kinds of military industries. So we really don't have the brain power that we need to try and look at other ways of doing business besides war. Most of the candidates use language which implies that war is an acceptable means of executing foreign policy. As long as that's the case, as long as we focus on that or accept it, we aren't going to get anywhere with our other programs. The second one that I'm concerned about is free trade as it's practiced by NAFTA, by the WTO. There's a lot of problems in this country, not only immigration, because these pacts have beggared other countries, particularly Mexico, so they have no choice but to come here. But basically, as we all know, it's shipped a huge amount of our productive capability overseas. You can talk about better free trade agreements in the future, and most of the candidates are, with one exception of the people who really like free trade. But you can't do anything about the present, which has already pretty much ruined our economy, unless you get out of the existing agreements. Dennis Kucinich is the only one who's proposed getting out of NAFTA and out of the WTO, if nothing else, as an educational endeavor to show why these are creating problems for us. Thirdly, there's the danger to our constitutional system of government, which has been embodied in the various denials of reality that Mr. Cheney and his legal counsel, David Addington, have produced over the past 6 years, which we are seeing all around us. This development of the unitary executive, the president powerful over all. It's fine to say we're going to try and make rules to limit the executive, but in fact we need to renounce what has already been done. I haven't heard any of the candidates renouncing the power, the, their use in the future of these powers if it became necessary, if they were pushed. And this is why Mr. Kucinich is speaking out in favor of impeachment, even though these gentlemen should be out of office within the next year, because if something isn't done by the country to say this is simply too dangerous to allow as a precedent, we're going to be stuck with future presidents, no matter how good they are when they start out, asserting these rights for themselves. And all of these wonderful programs that Congress could pass are irrelevant if Congress becomes irrelevant. So these are the things that Kucinich talks about that are important. And unless we elect delegates for Kucinich to speak to the Democratic Party at the state level, and beyond that to elect delegates to speak to the National Party, who both which levels are ignoring these major issues, they're still dealing with micro type of things. Unless we elect those delegates to give voice, these big issues will never be heard by the public. The public will not be aware of them and the overriding power they have over all the other issues the candidates are talking about.
Well, thank you, Dick. And last up, we have Lael Stegall, who is an advocate for Barack Obama. Lael, how long have you been involved, and where are you from?
I'm from Sunshine on Deer Isle. I have had, I'd like to say now, decades of political engagement as a political feminist. I led the Island Democrats for 4 years, and I'm very proud to be part of the Hancock County Democrats, which may be one of the most active committees in the state, and Bethany and her colleagues do a terrific job. I think this is a time of sort of exploding democracy, in a way, in our own communities. There's a fierce urgency about what's happening in our country now vis-a-vis our foreign policy, the economy, our neighborhoods, homes, and what has been an era of an extraordinary divisiveness. We've been pitted against each other as rural, urban, ethnic groups, black, white, Asian, gay, straight, men and women. And it's time now to come together. I am, my heart and sense of rightness about the candidacy of Senator Barack Obama for presidency of the United States is really grounded in three things: leadership and character, expertise, and change. Barack Obama is a leader for the 21st century. As a young man, he's 46 years old. He brings to us an opportunity to do it differently. He brings a lifetime of rich life experience in multicultures, raised by a single mother, being the very best possible in anything he's ever done. He is a person who is committed to bringing us together. As we heard from him 4 years ago, he is talking, we are the United States of America, not red and blue and all these different divisions. So I see in him an opportunity to move from the politics of fear to really the politics of hope. And while I know that is a shibboleth that has often been used by Democratic candidates, even Republicans from time to time, this is a person who really believes and has the leadership power and skill that we can come together and stop demonizing others, whether they're in our communities or in our foreign policy. So this is a time when we have got to have a national leader, and I think Americans are hungry, hungry, hungry to have someone they can believe in, someone they can trust. Secondly, I believe that Barack Obama brings enormous expertise to this challenge of leadership. He has an uncommon capacity to do well, whether it's being a community organizer, as he was for 7 years in the south side of Chicago. And can you imagine what it would be like to have a president of the United States who had been a community organizer, and what skills this would bring, listening, coalition building, bringing us together, confronting violence at a daily level? He, as the other candidates we've talked about, has lots of public service in his background. He took his Harvard Law School education and immediately went into teaching and public service. He can model what 21st century leadership is about. Yes, that is sitting down with our enemies and with our adversaries. It's talking. It's finding solutions. It's not using bombs and force to bring about democracy, to promote liberty, all of these things that we are so weary and have damaged our reputation. He will use his expertise to build respectful alliances in our country and in the world. Finally, he is about change and the future. Our demographics, the world order with globalization, technology, all these things, we are in a very different place than we were in the mid-90s. And Barack Obama is a person. He spoke out October 2nd, 2002, against the war before it started. He will have us out of the war in Iraq right away. He will talk about rebuilding the economy. He believes in good teachers. He is about health care, building, making sure, and by the end of his first year, there will be accessible health care for everyone in this country. And I think we are going to learn more specificity about his issues in the next coming weeks. But this is a man who is going to reintroduce America to the world and, frankly, to reintroduce it to ourselves. This campaign, the Barack Obama campaign for the U.S. presidency, is about all of us. This is our campaign. And so I am very excited that here in Maine we have this wildly small-D Democratic caucus in which we can go and rant and rave and talk and persuade and hug and argue. And you've heard superb presentations today. But this is a chance for us to do something. And that is what Obama's campaign is about nationally. So I hope on Sunday, February 10th, you and your friends and colleagues, and write letters, talk to your friends, bring them there, and make your voice heard. For Barack Obama, I hope.
Well, Bill, thank you very much. You, as a Maine voter, can actually vote for a Democrat even if you are an independent. And if my information is correct, more Maine residents are independents than anything else. And so, Bethany, how would somebody who is an independent want to get involved with voting as a Democrat in the caucus?
Well, you do have to register as a Democrat to vote in the caucus. So an independent, or we officially they're called unenrolled voters, can go to the caucus site. The clerk will be on hand a half an hour before the starting time of the caucus. And if you're an independent, you can go there and register as a Democrat to participate in the caucus. If you're not enrolled at all, if you're unregistered, you can also go and register at that time and participate. If you're a Green or Republican, unfortunately, the date has already passed. That was last Friday, or Saturday, actually, the 26th. Was the deadline for changing party affiliation to vote in the caucus. But if you're unenrolled, you certainly can come and participate, and we welcome new faces. Also, if you're if you know anyone who's 17 but is going to be 18 by November 4th of this year to vote at Election Day, they can also take part in the caucus, and we're encouraging young people to get involved this year.
Well, thanks a lot. At this time, we would like to open the lines to take phone calls from the audience. The phone number is 1-866-625-9378. If you have questions for any of the advocates, you can ask them now. Or if you just have comments about the whole campaign as it's been unfolding, you could do that too. I think we might have a call, but I just wanted to say one thing. That, Nancy, I remember on Thursday the 17th, you closed your comments with a quotation from Queen Elizabeth. That was, for me, the most memorable part of the evening.
Well,
could you paraphrase that?
Yes, I don't want to. Hillary Clinton is against the imperial presidency.
You see where I'm going here.
Yes. So I took that out of my comments this morning. But I think the statement that she made on the plains of Salisbury is still appropriate. I may have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a president, and I'm a president of the United States, too. I mean, she said, Queen Elizabeth said, right, king, but we right. would say for Hillary, president. I have the heart and stomach. And the New York Times, in their editorial, backed me up on that.
Well, I just couldn't help but reflect at that moment how Richard Holbrooke, who is her most prominent foreign policy advisor, actually is sort of an advocate of empire, and thought that Bush was justified in going into Iraq. So I was just wondering about how you felt about that. But you've clarified that before you quoted. We do have a couple of calls, so without further ado.
She is always speaking out about totally against what's been happening in the Bush administration and this move towards the imperial presidency. She's very careful about that.
So her vote for the...
That's one of her chief issues, I said this morning. One of her chief issues is to restore the democracy in this country.
Her vote for the Kiel-Lieberman agreement, move, whatever it was, the...
Kyle Lieberman.
The Kyle Lieberman proposal was part of that?
Well, I'm not familiar with that, so I can't comment on it.
All right, well, our first caller.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Magnus. Thanks a lot for the show. This is Gray from Hancock.
Hi, Gray.
I'm registered as a Green Party member in here in Hancock, not necessarily because I am a fervent supporter of the Green Party and everything it stands for, but because I see that the only way to get rid of all the problems that we're talking about is election reform, and the first step in that is to get a multi-party system instead of a two-party system. And I haven't heard anybody this morning, I may have missed something, but I haven't heard anybody really say the words election reform. We really need to get rid of this direct election of presidents. We need to have instant runoff kind of voting. We need to get more representation at a grassroots level instead of having it all be strained through this process where the same group of elites cycles around the various powerful offices in the country, and you get, 20 years later, you're getting Poindexter and all those guys coming back into the government. This is sick. We've got to really have representative government. Right now, we do not have representative government, and election reform is the first step to really changing and humanizing the United States. And I'd like to hear some of the. And I know Dennis Kucinich is probably the closest to me on that issue, but I'd like to hear some of the representatives there talk about that, and I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody want to field that one?
Well, Hillary is for election reform to the extent that she wants every vote to count as a vote and very much wants to do something about the problems we've been having with machines in the country, and this is one of her issues.
Anybody else?
Yeah, and I would just say that Barack Obama has been absolutely in the forefront of sort of ethics reform in government. I think the issue that the caller raises about election reform is an important one and needs the kind of thoughtful discussion and consideration that he has obviously given to it. I have to challenge him a little bit in that there are forces at work and working to get more people into elective office at our county level, state, national, and the resurgence of the entry of women into politics at all levels, and the fact that we have a Barack Obama as a candidate, that Bill Richardson has been a candidate, that Hillary Clinton is a candidate. Dennis and Edwards, this diversity is about people who are tired of that same old voice that we've heard.
I would just say he mentioned the revolving door kind of in Washington. Edwards has been very strong on passing laws and executive orders in terms of how quickly you can leave government and then immediately start lobbying it. He wants to extend those times. He brought this up, I think, in 2004 when he ran also. I think that's an important part of it, that you can't just keep jumping back and forth across the fence between being in government and being the person who's lobbying government. He's also been he hasn't accepted any PAC money from any special interest groups, so he's maintained a lot of independence.
Well, thank you, Will. We have another caller. Good morning. Welcome to the Mock Caucus.
good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Excellent discussion. What Dick Gatley said most appeals to what I'm thinking about right now, and that's that the military-industrial complex is what's running the country. Charlie Wilson's War, which is at the Real Pizza right now, really is a true story about how the CIA financed the the Al-Qaeda and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets, and now we're facing those very same weapons that we supplied them. And that's the topic that most needs to be discussed and aired. Most people don't realize that the CIA is running the government, and Dennis Kucinich, unfortunately, is not in the picture now. Most addresses that, and that it's frightening. Any other politician is still in the loop of politics as usual. And what was the thing? Yeah, I think when Hillary does come to Maine, that everyone, and Barack, but I think Hillary probably does know about the covert secret government operating, and it's not a conspiracy theory. You know, you just the Chile, recent Aristide was the CIA coup. That's what really needs to get out to the American public. And I think Hillary really knows about the CIA covert operations, and I plan to ask her about that, as well as Barack Obama. There's nothing less than confrontation politics for me. And thank you for having this discussion. I appreciate it. And peace be with you all today. Bye-bye.
As an ardent supporter of Hillary, I'm a little surprised by her statement that she will get all the troops out of Iraq in her first year of presidency. And I'm wondering how that can be done. But she has made that certainly one of her promises. And I think that's the first step, is to get us out of that war as quickly as possible.
Well, I would just like to point out that what the caller said, and you know, for some people it may sound a bit extreme, but Chalmers Johnson, who wrote a trilogy of books about American foreign policy, did a very good job on describing what's called military Keynesianism, which means basically is that after World War II, the various companies that had done very well doing military work began to focus on that instead of on the productive work that they were doing earlier. And in the intervening years, a much larger percentage of manufacturing and economic activity in general has been going toward the military because of the foreign policy that we are using, which is an expansionist one that requires a military. And I can't remember the proportion of the economy that's now devoted to the military, particularly in terms of manufacturing, but it's stunning. And it's one of the reasons, you know, it's harder to export military manufacturing. So that's one of the few sectors which tends to still exist here, whereas all the other manufacturing sectors have been transferred overseas. So the presence, the military-industrial complex is an old-fashioned term which very much still exists. And that the power of that group of corporations is immense. Anytime you look at this closely, you see it. So that anybody who is talking about the military, Barack Obama, for instance, said he wanted to increase the size of the military to make rotations easier. And I like a lot of what Barack says, but things like this indicate that there's an underlying assumption that the military is something that we need to have, and we need to have it big. And you can't have both that and all the other things that people are asking for. And again, this is why I think it's important you can elect Kucinich delegates who will give voice to this, since he's been kept out of a large part of the debates, as I'm sure you all know, by electing delegates. The delegates are not required to vote beyond the first vote for the person they're assigned to, so that all the people who are Kucinich delegates, I'm sure, have secondary choices that they would like to vote for that would probably be quite acceptable to the other candidates. So I'm just, again, saying I think it's well worth trying to increase the proportion of those delegates to be able to talk about these larger issues.
I also want to add that Hillary knows how to work from the inside. She has been on the National Security Committee in the Senate. And if she does in that committee what she has done for global warming in the Senate, we're going to see a great change in senatorial opinion about this military-industrial complex. This is a woman who supports children, not war.
If I could just briefly, the caller at the very end said she wanted the politics of confrontation. Well, then she should definitely support John Edwards. He's the most confrontational of the candidates.
Well, we have another caller. Good morning. Welcome to the Mock Caucus on WERU.
Good morning. Just to clarify the supporter of Hillary, doubting that Hillary could get the troops out within a year, Hillary said yesterday that she would get them out the first 60 days.
Wow.
Whether she do that or not remains to be seen. Another thing is the amount of money that's being spent. Gwen Ifill on the NewsHour did a thing about a tremendous amount of money that was being used by the candidates and where it was going, which really isn't the story. It's where it's coming from. And when you raise that amount of money that's being spent in this campaign, just in primaries, you've got to wonder, well, you really don't have to wonder. You know where it's coming from. It's coming from corporate lobbyists, the people that they're going to have to pay back. And if you'd like to address that, I'd be interested in hearing so. Bye.
This is Lael Stegall on Barack Obama. Thanks for raising that issue. I share with you, I suspect, your revulsion at the amount of money that is going into campaigns and watching this sort of endless primary that's going on right now. I want to be very clear. The Barack Obama campaign does not accept contributions from corporate lobbyists. He's been very, very clear about that. The money that is coming into that campaign is from you and me. Well, I don't know about you, but lots of people. There's a whole new generation. When you look at the voters who voted in South Carolina, 57% of the South Carolina Democrats had never voted in a primary. So we're bringing into this mix and the monies that are being raised on the internet. So that is beginning to change. Obama early on talked about hoping that in the general he could get agreement with his Republican colleague to make it a public-financed general. I don't know what progress is made on about that, but people like you and me have to continue to raise hell about it.
John Edwards is the only major candidate who is running a publicly financed primary campaign, and he hasn't accepted any money from lobbyists or political action committees, whereas other major candidates have from insurance companies and other major.
How do you say it's publicly financed? That would mean that all of his campaign money comes from federal sources.
What I'm saying is he's using the publicly, to the extent that there is a public financing system available, he's using it, which means he's getting matching grants from the federal government.
In
the primary, yeah. And doing what he has to do, which is limiting how much money he's raising and spending thereby.
Given that none of these people are accepting money from industry, it'd be interesting to explain the pie charts that show all the different industries and how much proportion each candidate is getting from the legal industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the military industry. There are pie charts there, and given that none of them is accepting corporate money, it's intriguing. Dennis Kucinich actually is the only candidate, and of course you can see what happens in other circumstances, who didn't accept corporate money, period.
I think Barack Obama, but you know, under campaign finance laws, if you make a contribution, you have to write down who's your employer. So if I write Lael Stegall and my employer is a law firm, I would be probably in that pie chart as a lawyer, and I actually would disagree. There's a difference between a collective corporate PAC and what you and I do as people with jobs in many sectors.
All right, the phone number here is 1-866-625-9378. We have another caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to WERU's Mock Caucus.
Yeah. I just wanted to bring up an issue that I always pay attention to with these candidates is the alternative energy thing. And which of them claim that nuclear power is an alternative energy? And I think among the Democrats, Edwards has come out against nuclear power, and probably Kucinich is, I'm not sure, but I actually emailed Barack Obama, a year ago asking for his position on nuclear energy when the energy bill was passed, and he never really got back to me on that, so I was sort of curious as what his position was.
Good question. I am not in a position to give you a definitive answer in that. I know he is very, very aggressively supporting a variety of issues on energy and the environment and renewables and new resources and conservation on nuclear. I would go to his website, barackobama.com. It is a pretty sophisticated site with lots of commentary on lots of issues. I'd be delighted to follow up, and you can call me at 348-6839 in a few days, and I'll share what I know.
Well, and the same for HillaryClinton.com. What I do know is that she worked inside the Senate on the global warming issue. She was able to convince senators that were important on this issue and would be influencing the vote in the Senate on global warming to travel with her to the Arctic, where there was a conference of scientists. And there those senators saw for themselves what was happening to the Arctic. And they came back, and there was a whole change in attitude in the Senate. This is a woman who knows how to negotiate and to get people to see what's in front of them, if she can get them there. And she got them there this time to see it. So this is an issue she's working on from another angle.
I'll take the caller's word for it that Edwards is against it. It's the kind of thing he would be against, I think, because it's accepting nuclear power as a green energy source is a kind of fudging and kind of early compromise that Edwards rejects. And he would recognize that it may not produce any carbon, but nuclear energy has a whole set of problems on its own, and there's no need to accept it into the portfolio of green technologies.
And speaking from the Kucinich point of view, of course, he is definitely feels that nuclear power is a no-win situation for everyone, which may have affected his Nevada debate entry. I will say this for John Edwards, though, in looking through the various positions of the candidates, John Edwards is the only one of these major candidates who has said that his ultimate goal is to get rid of all nuclear weapons in the world, not just those other people, but all of them. And I haven't heard any of the other candidates mention that, and that's an interesting position to take.
Thank you very much, Dick.
Well, we do have another caller. The phone number, 1-866-625-9378. Good morning, and welcome to WERU's Mock Caucus.
Yes, thank you. Great program. Just a quick comment on Kucinich. I think that's probably the best advice that you've been given on this caucus is from the man, young man who wants to send Kucinich delegates in order to speak up, because the only hope for this country is to have a revolution in the Democratic Party. The lady who speaks up for Hillary Clinton as being a great negotiator, she's been inside, she knows that is the very first reason that you ought not to support this woman. She's been inside, and inside is staying with the imperial power that we have now, and it's going to just be very difficult to change unless we get the third party election reform done and work together as a community to get it done, to work with each other and to work in meetings to conduct strategy to educate people on what is really going on in this country. Kucinich comes the closest to any of these candidates, so yeah, I hope the delegates you will take his word and get people at your caucus to go and speak up for the things that he knows about. Thanks a lot.
Since you brought Hillary Clinton to task, I would like to answer that. You can have autocracy, you can have anarchy. If you're going to have a government keeping peace, you're going to have negotiation. So I don't think it's bad to be a tough, fair negotiator who's thinking about everybody in the country, children, women, blacks, whites. This is a woman who appeals to a broad spectrum of our population.
I'd just like to say, for people who are Kucinich supporters, I think you should definitely consider Edwards. I think in many ways he's kind of the Kucinich who can win. And especially if you go to the caucus and you caucus for Kucinich, and there are not very many of you, I hope your second choice and the part of the room you'll go into is the Edwards corner.
Well, thank you. We have another caller. Good morning. Welcome to our Mock Caucus. What is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Frank in Lemoyne.
Go ahead, Frank.
Most people who run for president are representing the American people. And until the American people stop being so damn greedy for all the stuff they need, or want, they don't need, but want, it'll be business as usual. Like, you know, we go around to conquer the world so we can get all their goods, so we can fill up Target and Walmart, so Americans can just consume. And I, you know, it's, the closest person to that non-consumption thing was Dennis Kucinich. The rest of them are just consume, get more money, period. You know, we need a huge change in this country, you know, and stop going around pushing our values on the rest of the world. I mean, the only reason we got terrorists is we pushed our values and tried to squeeze their teenage girls into Levi tight jeans back in the 70s and it irritated them. People they cannot realize that. And Hillary Clinton is a nice person, a good person, but she is definitely an inside person. And I think people are just kind of barraged because they want to vote for her because she's a change, because she's a woman. And the same with Barack. And, you know, the best candidate would be a midget, black, lesbian woman.
Well, thank you, Frank. That's definitely an independent view there, and we appreciate that.
I actually sort of like your flair, Frank. Go for it. And I think you were still reeling from 8 years of a government in which our president, in his first year, is so go out and shop, was his answer to 9/11.
Good point, Lael.
If you don't want to vote for people just because they're first, then you definitely should vote for John Edwards because he's a white male.
Well, there you go. There you have it. We do have another caller. By the way, 1-866-625-9378. Yes, you are calling from where, and your name is?
In Belfast. My name is Laura.
Hi,
and,
Laura.
I was calling up because it seems that both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are pushed by the media, and I think they're pushed by the media because they're corporate candidates. And Hillary Clinton, who says that she's for women and children, she's ready to have Iran bombed. She's not, you know, she says it's not off the table. So anybody, any woman who would allow nuclear bombs to be dropped on Iran and kill millions, you know, have the potential to kill women and children is not what I would call a real woman. And she voted for the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act. She really wasn't against Iraq, and if you are really against Iraq, you would never consider going into Iran. And Obama, he voted against Iraq, but he funds it. So I have very little confidence in those candidates, and you know, they both make me feel kind of ill because of what somebody was talking about, the military industrial complex. That's what they support. Their domestic policy might be okay, but their foreign policy is really bad. And if people are under stress, it's because we're spending all our money on war and the military. So, I mean, you can't, somebody said this before, but how can they help the economy when all our money is going out for, you know, killing people? So I really am not for Hillary at all. I really can't stand her, and I don't like Obama, and Edwards seems, you know, I like him the best of the three, but Dennis Kucinich is the one with real values, and if people knew what he was about, I think they'd definitely go for him, because he's, I believe, the only real candidate, and I think Ron Paul, you know, is second, but, you know, they're more the same, and also if people knew what Bill Clinton did, use depleted uranium on people. I mean, he's instituted NAFTA, and the media just, you know, these candidates, they talk about trivia. They don't talk about the real issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Nancy?
Yes, I see that Hillary's vote on the Iran issue. I'm sorry, I'm not totally informed on that vote, but I believe that that vote restricted the president. He had to come back to the Senate before he ever did that, ever entered Iran with armed forces, and that it was a restriction on the president. And and she is on the National Security Committee, and it's important for her, if she wants to get those troops out of Iraq, to be this you're seeing her working to work with these people, other senators, not to edge them over to getting those soldiers out of Iraq. Why would she promise to get them out, as the gentleman just told me, in 60 days if she didn't know she has a lot of support for that on the National Security Committee? So that vote was not a vote for going into Iran. It was a vote for circumscribing the president.
I would just like to say, in keeping your perspective, that at the first Democratic debate, all of the candidates except Dennis Kucinich said that they expected they probably wouldn't be able to get the troops out of Iraq until 2013. I think it's worth remembering that. That is what they said, all of them. I was sort of stunned by it. And it's interesting to watch the horizon creeping slowly toward election day as this campaign goes. You have to remember that, what do you mean by taking the troops out of Iraq? You can take a lot of troops out of Iraq, but if you leave them in bases in Iraq, you know, there aren't too many of them, but there are enough to hold those bases. If you have them, quote, guarding this monstrosity of an embassy that we are building or finished building there, which is the best statement of our imperial presence in the Mideast that you could possibly imagine, since it's twice as big as the one in China, which is the largest one we've got. You have to ask yourself, what are these people saying when they say we're going to get the troops out of Iraq in 90 days or in the first year, when all along they've been saying it's probably going to take a lot longer than that? I don't get it.
Thank you, Dick. We have one caller. Caller, welcome to the caucus. If you could make your question brief and tell us where you're calling from and what is your name.
Hi, this is Chris from Bremen. Yeah, I was calling. I'm an unregistered Diebold voter.
Diebold.
All right, Chris.
All right. And, you know, I think you have to look at the advisors, right? Holbrooke, Amy Goodman did a rundown on him last night. Bad. You have to look at the Clinton's history of deregulation. Kucinich's the only one speaking about impeachment. But the biggest question is about Blackwater and the other mercenaries that have so gotten into this government and are controlling huge portions of our national budget. And they're completely unaccountable. There's a story today about protesters that were arrested in a peaceful demonstration at Blackwater's gate. They're the only people that are serving time for anything related to Blackwater. Nothing to do with all the, you know, crimes that they're committing, really, in our name. And I haven't heard any candidate speak about this at all.
If I could say something, John Edwards has been very strong about ending all mercenary participation in Iraq, as well as getting all the combat troops out.
How about Potrero, California, when they're going to guard the border? And, you know, I mean, they just got a huge contract for drug interdiction in South America. Yeah. You're telling me he's going to end all that?
Well, I think that one thing I haven't mentioned is that I think John Edwards, of all the candidates, is the strongest on labor issues, and obviously not contracting out, especially not contracting out something as sensitive as military power.
Contracts, you mean?
What?
Like Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown, and Root.
All those people, yes. Yeah. So right. I think John Edwards believes, I know he does, that government functions should be performed by government employees, and that means not using mercenaries, not using contractors.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Platform for writing bills to that effect?
Yeah, well, if you visit johnedwards.com, you can find his positions on those
right.
topics. But I have heard him talk specifically
also,
about
just one last thing, and then I'll let you go. But I believe that Hillary is actually the Republican candidate.
Thanks, Chris. Well, we're just about going to end our little mock caucus. Bethany's been taking copious notes. Did you have something to add, Bethany?
I just wanted to add that as you've seen from our discussion this morning, democracy is not a spectator sport. It works best when we all participate and we're all informed and engaged. So I hope that you will come to your town's caucus on Sunday, February 10th. Thanks.
Well, thank you to Dick, Will, Lael, Nancy, and Bethany for coming down to WEAU and sharing your insights with us.
Voices.